This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
How great to have Dr. Walter Block with us this morning. Dr. Block is professor of economics at Loyola University in New Orleans, where he holds the Howard Wirth Chair, author of what seems like a million books, Walter, and 10 million articles, one of the most prolific defenders of liberty. Walter's here for the Mises University. We have hundreds of attendees. But Walter, I want to ask you about an alarming rumor I've heard about you. I just have to ask you this, if you'll excuse me. I hear that you are an anarchist.
Certainly not. I am a big believer in government, and I believe that government has one function, and the function is to force everyone to read Man, Economy, and State. Apart from that, no, I'm kidding, of course. I am an anarchist. I believe that government is a criminal gang, that it's uncivilized, barbaric. There are two ways that we can deal with each other. You have a lovely yellow tie, I see, and I covet that. And I have two ways of getting it out from you. One is the coercive, barbaric way, where I come at you with a gun and say, unless you give me that tie, I'm going to plug you. Or I hold an election of all the people around here, and if I can convince them to agree democratically that I should have your tie, somehow we all beat you up and I get it out of you. That's one way. The other, that's sometimes called the political means. The economic means is, you know, I say, Lou, I like that tie. I'll give you $50. I'll give you $100. I'll be your best friend forever, you know, something. And if you say no, well, then I just can't have the tie because it's your tie. And archy, or government, is the first means. It's there's a velvet glove, but there's an iron fist in there somewhere, you know, if you don't believe me, and I know you do, but if people out there in the audience don't believe me, try not paying your taxes on April 15th and see what happens. They'll send you a nice letter first, you know, did you forget, or something like that, and then an escalating letter. And then eventually there'll be men in blue that will visit you and say, you know, you're going to jail, which is kidnapping, because you didn't pay something that you didn't agree to pay. And I think that that's horrendous and criminal.
Walter, in fact, the government is the institution that if you don't pay their parking ticket and sufficiently resist paying their parking ticket, claim the right to put a bullet in your head.
Well, I don't know if they'd put a bullet in your head. Well, if you resist.
If you sufficiently resist them.
Yes. But that's quite true. But then you're guilty of more than just, in their view anyway, of just more than not paying
a ticket. Well, the kidnappers are coming to get you. And I agree, of course, you should pay the parking ticket.
Oh, I think as a matter of pragmatism, you should pay your parking tickets. I certainly don't believe in taking up the gun and opposing the government. I think that that would be very foolhardy. I think that the best way to deal with government criminality is by calling a spade, by writing about it, speaking about it, peacefully trying to convince people. Because government really depends for its, I won't say legitimacy, but for its continuation on the views of the people. If, 75% of the people thought the way I do or the way we do, well, we'd have either much, much less government or no government at all. The reason we have so much government is people acquiesce, either because they think that they can't do anything or because they think it's right. So I think that the way to go to stop this institution, this curious institution that people revere, is to do what we're now doing, talking about it, writing about it, publishing about it, giving speeches about it, things like that.
Well, the great De Labuetti, that Murray Rothbard wrote a wonderful introduction to his book on political obedience, he said that the king, this is a man writing, a friend of Montaigne's writing in the 16th century, that they were always worried about why are people opposing the king? Why are there people who are rebelling against the king? Why are there people who are not doing what the king wants? He said, really, the mystery to be explained is, why does anybody obey the king anyway? It's not in your interest. And, you know, he came to the conclusion, I guess the first person to make the point you're making, that government depends on the consent of the governed. And if the climate of opinion changes, as I think, just to take a very small example, we're seeing right now with this Obama healthcare business, it looked like it was going through without any trouble through the House and the Senate, and they were going to have no trouble. All of a sudden, I think sort of middle-class Americans realized, holy smokes, as bad as the present system is, this semi-state, semi-private system is, it can actually be much worse, and this is going to make it worse. They're going to raise our taxes. They're going to be spying on us more, right, and in control of all health matters. And it's actually slowed it. It's slowed the process because, of course, government, as you point out, is a parasite, and the parasite has to be smaller than the host, or otherwise they can't live in the style to which they've become accustomed.
Right.
And so we, as the host, can actually say no. We can actually, by doing the kind of work that you've done for all your life, you can actually have an effect on changing the climate of opinion.
The work you've done also, if I can drag you in on this, yes, you're certainly right. The parasite can't be 90%. I mean, 90% can't prey on 10%. It's got to be the other way around. There's not much blood in the stone if you do it that way. So you're in a great minority position. And that's why the government has to suborn the intellectuals to make the case that either the government is inevitable or the government is benevolent or necessary or a necessary evil, whatever it is. And this applies not only in democracy, but even under totalitarianism. If the totalitarian dictator gets too far out ahead of the pack and he's no longer a part of the pack and he orders the soldiers to shoot the crowd and the soldiers turn the gun around and shoot him, that can happen too. So even under totalitarianism, and happily we live under a non-totalitarian society compared to some places, and here we have a lot more freedom, for which we're grateful, which gives us the ability to say no or to realize that the emperor has no clothes.
Walter, if somebody is interested in learning more about anarchism, where should they start? I mean, should they start with Franz Oppenheimer and his great book, The State, available at Mises.org? Should they go back to De La Boetie, look at Rothbard's essay and great introduction to that work? Should they look at Murray's works? Your work, Hoppe, where should they look?
Well, there's Spooner, No Treason, who is magnificent. But my two favorite people are Murray Rothbard and Hans Hoppe. I would say that they, just personally for me, all these other authors that you mentioned are good for different people. You know, it's interesting. When my book, Defending the Undefendable, came out, one of the criticisms was it was too radical. And I'm a subjectivist, methodological individualist on this question. And my view is, well, yeah, it's probably too radical for some people. But for other people, it's just perfect. Well, it's the same thing with this. You mentioned five or six books, and there's no one right book for everyone. You know, some people will think Spooner is too flowery or too old-fashioned, and some people will think Hoppe is too rigorously logical, is the way I see him, sort of like a Spock. I think Hans is like the Spock of our movement, just rigorous logic, and some people are turned off by that. Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, it's a novel. She doesn't have one good thing to say about the state in that novel, even though she's not an anarchist. That's an anarchist book. And some people might start there. So it's really, in my view, a subjective kind of a thing. Some books are good for some people, others for others. For me, it's Rothbard and Hoppe. Rothbard's written many books on this, as has Hans Hoppe. And I would say that would be, if I were to start all over again, that would be what I would do. And those are the two authors that I recommend most.
All these books that we're talking about are available on Mises.org and, of course, on through LouRockwell.com as well. And if we're talking about Murray, maybe For a New Liberty is the best way for somebody to start. Hoppe's great book, Democracy, the God That Failed, is one of these life-changing works, I would say.
Right.
Like Rothbard, Ethics of Liberty with Murray, Man, Economy, and State. And the new edition unites Man, Economy, and State with Power and Market, which was the most radical part, which conservatives saw was sundered from the work when it was first published. Right. Now it's reunited. This is a great anarchist work, and maybe the place to start if you want to learn economics as well.
There are also very short essays. I mean, some of these books, Murray's books are 200-300 pages. Hans's book is 200 or 300 pages. They're very short essays that are on LouRockwell.com, and I would recommend two of them. One is by Robert Murphy, something like Will the Warlords Take Over? I forget the exact title, something like that. And then there's Roderick Long's piece, 10 Objections to Anarchism, both of which I think are magnificent. All you'd have to do is look up Roderick Long or Bob Murphy and look under either Anarchism or 10 Objections or Will the Warlords Take Over? There's another piece done by Patrick Tinsley, also on lewrockwell.com, something, no, I think this is published in the Journal of Libertarian Studies, all of which is available on the Mises web.
Yes.
And it's something like Private Police. I forget the exact title, but Private Police was in there. So if you search for that, because police and courts and armies are the institutions that even that limited government people, limited government libertarians would say that there is one function for the government, one legitimate function, and that is to protect persons and property. And to that end, you need three institutions, armies, courts, and police. And I think the last hurdle for the non-anarchist libertarian to achieve the grace of anarchism would be seeing why even these institutions or industries could be privatized. And here's where Hans and Murray and others have done yeoman work.
You know, Walter, I also want to mention Murray's great essay, The Anatomy of the State, which is also available on lewrockwell.com. Again, this is one of those life-changing essays.
That is magnificent. War, Peace, and the State is also high up there. Although
yes.
With Murray, it's hard to say which ones of his things are better because they're all excruciatingly beautiful.
But all of these can be taking the red pill. I mean, all of a sudden you can see through the state propaganda, all the stuff we're taught in the state schools, through the state-connected media, as you say, that they're that here in the private world, we're concerned with our nasty, mean, selfish, private ends, whereas they're, of course, concerned with the national good, the common good, the national defense, all the rest of this hogwash. But so they're, you know, again, that they're a parasite, that they should not be above the moral law, that what is legitimately illegal for you and me, murder, kidnapping, theft, and so forth, doesn't become allowable just because you're wearing a government suit. In fact, maybe it's less allowable.
You know, one of the best arguments that I use to turn people around on this is the argument from World Government You have to add an to the end of World Government to show you're sophisticated, I think. The point is, look, right now, China and Portugal are in a state of anarchy with regard to each other. Namely, there's no institution over the both of them such that if there was any dispute between China and Portugal or Arabia and Australia or any two countries, there is no world government right now. So if you're really against anarchy, if you want government, in other words, you and I, Lou, right now, thank God we have a government. So if you and I are at each other's throats, the government will settle it. Fine. Well, if that's true, then the Portuguese and the Russians might be at each other's throats, and we need someone to make sure that they behave themselves, and that's a world government. So if you're really an archist and you're logically consistent, you have to favor world government.
But, you know, Walter, don't all the statists and don't all the liberals and conservatives, the official ones anyway, don't they in effect support world government? I mean, don't they think that the U.S. writ should run everywhere on earth, that everything is the possible business of the U.S. Congress, that there's nothing that somebody in Afghanistan is doing or not doing that it's not the business of the U.S.? In fact, they can be killed if the U.S., some U.S. agency decides to kill them.
Well, Lou, I don't like this tenor of your question here. You were implying that this is illegitimate. Surely it's justified for the U.S. to rule the world. I mean, you know, we have to have some basic premises here. No, obviously, I agree with you. But you're right. They do favor world government, only they favor the world government being the U.S. But they also favor democracy. You know, we have to export democracy. And I hate to tell you, you're not into demographics, but the Chinese and the Indians have got more votes than we do if we ever had a vote. And so the world government, if it was just the U.S. world government, the neocons would be very happy with that. But I'm thinking of other people who aren't really in favor of world government. Say Jewish people, for example, who go from country to country, racing away from this dictator and that dictator. Well, imagine if Hitler ran the whole world government. There'd be no place to run. You can't go to the moon. You can't go to Mars. You know, at least, thank God, we have about 250 countries. We'd be better with 7,000 countries.
That's right. A little diversity.
A little diversity, right. And we'd be better. You know what the optimal number of countries is? 6 billion. We each have our own country, and there's no world government. And that's roughly what anarchism is.
I like it. The Republic of Block.
Oh, yes. The Republic of Rockwell. You know, we'll have treaties.
Well, I'll be a monarchy. Well,
I'll be a democracy, but I'll be the only one with a vote. So I think the optimal number of countries is 6 billion, which means anarchism or no overarching rule. But I think the point is to to address people who are on the fence, who can be convinced, not like a neocon or a liberal or someone like that or a conservative, but people who are honestly open in considering these questions. And the question is, do you really want world government? Do you want one authority that can rule the world and total homogeneity, or do you want diversity? I mean, you say you want diversity, and we do. You know, if this country is no good, at least you can go to another one. There's such a thing, the four-letter word, exit. If things are very bad in Ruritania, to use a country that Murray mentioned, well, you can go to some other country. But if Ruritania rules the world, there's no other place to go. And that's a big problem.
And it ought to be the same within the United States.
Oh.
So that if New York is oppressing you, you ought to be able to go to Louisiana.
Right.
And so there's, you know, we have, of course, a total central state. We have, in effect, a world government within the U.S. And a example of what happens. And again, where every single thing in your life, your business, your family, your community, your church, is all the business of the central government.
Well, you're quite right, and I think what you're edging onto, I don't know if you mean to, but I'll edge you in that direction, is the question of secession. Now, we fought a war about that in 1861. They called it the Civil War, but it really wasn't a civil war, because what a civil war is like the Civil War of Spain in 1936, where the commies and the fascists each wanted to rule all of Spain and kick the other guys out. That wasn't what happened in the U.S. The South didn't want to run the whole thing, the South plus the North. The North did, but not the South. The South just wanted to secede. So the proper name for that war is not the Civil War, but the War of Southern Secession, or the War of Northern Aggression, or the war to prevent Southern Secession, or what have you. By the way, this has nothing to do with slavery, and a lot of people who hear this say, Block favors slavery. You know, nonsense. There was slavery in the North, and the first secessionist movement was not the South in 1861. It was Massachusetts in 1823, 21, something like that. And the reason Massachusetts wanted to secede from the Union is they were against slavery. They said, look, the U.S. has slavery. Slavery is evil. We want to secede. It didn't work out, but secession is neither pro-slavery nor anti-slavery. It's a totally adventitious issue. It's got nothing to do with this. Well, Surely, if New Hampshire wants to secede because they don't like it, or Quebec wants to secede from Canada, that's their right, because, you know, the only problem with slavery is you couldn't secede from your master. I mean, otherwise, slavery was okay. You got food, you could pick cotton, you could sing songs. It's just that you couldn't quit. Well, if you can't quit, that means you can't secede from somebody. You know, people who are against secession also favor divorce. You know, they don't say that once you get married, you have to stay married. You can secede from your spouse. Well, it's a human right to secede, because we have this human right to associate with people on a basis of voluntarism as opposed to coercion, which is slavery. And if you can't secede, to that extent, you're really a slave. So if Brooklyn wants to secede from New York City, and New York City wants to secede from New York State, and New York State wants to secede from the U.S., and if there's a world government, and the U.S. wants to secede from the world government, like they once seceded from England in the Revolutionary War, well, all these things are justified, and to say that they're not justified is really to be pro-slavery.
Well, Walter is exactly right, and I remember also the Hartford Convention. If today a group of states were to meet together, as northern states did, in opposition to the War of 1812, they'd be nuked. They were talking about seceding, and to remember, too, when Andrew Jackson was willing to invade South Carolina over their refusing to pay taxes. He was a huge slaveholder, and he was a big advocate of central government and an opponent of secession. So you're right. Of course, it has nothing to do with slavery. And in fact, the reason the South is still hated today, that you can make fun of their languages and make fun of them as slow, and that there can be jokes about them, unlike other ethnic groups,
right,
is because they stood up to the federal government and are still hated for that.
Yeah, no, I'm a good old Southern boy now.
We're both immigrants, Walter.
That's right. Thank God for the South. You came from, I think, Boston.
Yes, yeah.
I came from Brooklyn, and I'm now in New Orleans, and you're in Auburn, Alabama. So we're both good old Southern boys, and thank God for the South, say I.
Well, Walter Block, thank God for you, and thanks for coming on to this podcast. And take a look at Walter Block's archive on LouRockwell.com. And Walter's written many magnificent articles on anarchism and a whole bunch of other subjects, war and private roads and just almost an infinite number of things. Walter, thanks a million.
Thanks for having me, Lou.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.